This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Futuro.
Hey, Latino USA listener. Here's an award-winning podcast from our archives. Back in 2014, before everything started, Teresa Matias lived in an apartment with her kids in Huntsville, Alabama. She worked all the time, in a factory and cleaning houses. Day shifts bled into night shifts. Her world was small, her work and her kids. And then, one day, someone knocked on her door.
Yo miré una señora así, pues, elegante, llegó, tocó la puerta, y yo dije, pues, ¿quién será? Como a mí casi nadie me visita.
Teresa saw it was a woman who was dressed nicely, and so she opened the door. The woman introduced herself. We're going to call her M. She was Mexican and spoke to Teresa in Spanish. She said she was from a local Catholic church. She says M noticed her four sons playing in the living room immediately and remarked, oh, you have four boys.
No, le digo, no son cuatro niños, son cinco, le digo, pero el otro, el más chiquito, está durmiendo, le dije.
Teresa said, actually, I have five boys. The youngest was still a baby and was sleeping in another room. When Teresa went to pick him up out of the bed, she says, M noticed that the baby looked different from Teresa's other children.
Y porque él es diferente, me dijo ella. Le dije yo. Yo tenía pena en decir eso. Él es diferente a su papá.
Teresa said she was a little embarrassed to explain that her youngest son, the baby, had lighter skin because he had a different dad, a white American guy who was never in the picture. M told Teresa that she wanted kids but had never been able to get pregnant. And then Teresa let M hold the baby. And out of nowhere,
ella me dijo, dame uno, dijo ella.
M asked Teresa to give her one of her children. Teresa was taken aback.
Le digo no, le dije yo.
Teresa said no. How could she ever give a child away? From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, an adoption without translation and exposing the cracks in our legal system. For this episode, we'll sometimes be referring to people with only the first initial of their name. And that's because this story involves children, and we want to protect their identity and privacy. Producers Ashley Cleek and Janice Yamoka traveled to Alabama to tell us the story of Teresa Matias. Ashley Cleek is going to start us off.
One Sunday morning in August, Janice and I drive to Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Huntsville, Alabama. Huntsville's a flourishing tech hub in a poor rural state. It has a small but growing Latino population. It's hot out, and we watch families run through the parking lot, sweat spots showing on their Sunday clothes. Holy Spirit is one of a handful of Catholic churches in Huntsville, and the fourth sermon of the day is about to begin, the Spanish language mass. The church is packed. The rows are filled with children, parents, grandparents, all dressed in their Sunday best. Mothers soothe frustrated babies while latecomers line the back walls of the church and listen to the sermon standing.
Pero esta misa de español es la única misa de español in Madison County. ¿Cómo es posible?
The pastor, a white man, reminds his congregation that this Mass is the only Spanish Mass in the county.
In 2015, the church welcomed a new member, Teresa Matias. Ashley and I met her in her home in Huntsville, where she lives with her four sons. So Teresa's in her early 30s, and she stands about 5 feet tall. She's originally from rural Guatemala and has been living in the U.S. for about 14 years. But she only knows a few words in English. So we spoke to her primarily in Spanish, which is her second language. Her first is a Mayan language called Canjobal.
Do you have energy to talk?
¿Tienes energía?
It's okay? Okay.
Soon after she moved to Huntsville, Teresa met a man and they moved in together. They had four sons. Over the years, he became abusive, so Teresa got a restraining order against him. She left him, and then her ex was deported. Around the same time, she had one more son with a white American man she knew from work, but he was never really in the picture. So Teresa was left alone, with five kids.
In the small city of Huntsville, and the even smaller Spanish-speaking community, word got around that there was a single mom with five boys who might need some help. And one day in the spring of 2014, a bunch of cars showed up at Teresa's door.
Llegaron muchos carros.
They were members from the church, Holy Spirit. They brought diapers and asked Teresa if she needed any help.
Tú, que tú necesitas ayuda de nosotros. Me dijo, ¿en qué te podemos ayudar?
Teresa appreciated the support. A few weeks after that is when a woman we're calling M, a light-skinned Mexican woman, knocked on Teresa's door. Em was pretty high up in the church. She was the secretary of the Spanish language ministry. And that's when she asked Teresa to give up a child. At the time, Teresa told Em directly, no way.
Le dije a ella, yo no voy a regalar a mi hijo. Le dije, tampoco lo voy a dar que lo adopte a cualquier persona y aunque lo conociera, no.
I won't give my child away, and I'm not letting anyone adopt him, even if I know them, she told Em. Teresa thought the subject was closed. They talked a little more. Em told Teresa that she didn't have kids, and later asked her if her boys were baptized.
Ella dijo que si estaban bautizados, le dije que no.
Em invited her to join the Catholic Church and told Teresa that if she wanted to have her kids baptized and if she needed godparents, Em would be happy to be the godmother for one of her kids.
So, here's where Teresa's at. Five kids, alone, out of a bad relationship, and without much support. And all of a sudden, this local church showed up at her doorstep. Teresa grew up Catholic in Guatemala and had missed being part of a church. She decided it was time to get her kids baptized, but she needed to find godparents first. And she didn't know many people at the time, so she asked a member of the church to help her find godparents for her sons.
Yo le dije a ella, solo necesito cuatro padrinos o madrinas, le digo, porque ella se ofreció en ser la madrina uno de los niños.
She told the woman that she only needed four godparents because when M came to visit her, she offered for her and her husband to be the godparents to her youngest son, the one who was half white. Usually, this role goes out to members of the family, like an aunt or an uncle, or close family friends. In Spanish, parents call their child's godparents comadre or compadre. And there isn't a word for this in English, but its literal translation means co-mother or co-father, like you're raising the child together. So the fact that Teresa had to find strangers to play this role for her kids was somewhat unique.
One of these strangers ended up being Humberto Castillo. Humberto's young, in his early 30s. Back then, he was pretty involved in the church. And when he was asked to be the godfather to one of Teresa's sons, it made him a bit nervous.
I have to think about it because, you know, I got to be the sample of this kid. I got to be the, if I'm the godfather, I have to show him like who I am.
Humberto grew up Catholic, and he understood that being a godparent is a big deal. He didn't know Teresa, and if he became a godfather to one of her sons, he knew he would become part of her family, her compadre. Humberto decides to take this on. He becomes the godfather of Teresa's oldest child, and he starts spending time with the family, taking the kids fishing, out for ice cream. Luckily for the family, Humberto's a mechanic.
When the car breaks, you know the godfather is always there.
You're the padrino.
Pretty quickly, all five kids were finally matched with godparents. And on February 28th, 2015, everyone met at the church for the baptism. Teresa, her five kids, all dressed in white, and the godmothers and godfathers, including Em and her husband, who we're going to call JP. After the ceremony, they all went out for lunch to celebrate at 88 Buffet, a Chinese restaurant in Huntsville.
Todo era bonito. Yo estaba bien contenta ese día porque era un sueño para mí.
Everything was beautiful, Teresa says. I was so happy. Her children were part of the religion she grew up with. And Teresa finally had a community.
After that day, little by little, things started to change. Em and JP were well off. They had a big house in a nice part of town. The couple wanted kids. And according to the church members we spoke to, they were pretty open about the fact that they biologically couldn't have them. So when they became godparents, Teresa says they wanted to spend more time with her youngest child.
Que ellos me habían dicho que para yo no dar vuelta en las mañanas y en las tardes, mejor que fuera a ver, bueno, las veces que yo quiera ir a verlo al niño.
Teresa says they told her to leave the child with them overnight, so she didn't have to keep driving back and forth, picking him up and dropping him off. Quickly, one night became two, then three, and soon the child was spending weeks at the couple's house. Teresa says she really needed someone to take care of her kids while she was working.
Y ellos saben muy bien que yo siempre trabajo de noche, de día.
Sometimes, she worked 18-hour days.
Then, in the summer of 2015, a few days after her youngest child turned two, Teresa found out that M and JP threw a birthday party for him when he was staying with them.
Bueno, ellos no me dijeron nada, pero yo me enteré que ellos hicieron la fiesta del niño un domingo.
It was published on Facebook, but they didn't tell Teresa or invite her. Teresa didn't like it, but she didn't say anything to them, and she didn't get mad. She respected them, and she needed their help taking care of the little boy. Soon after, M and JP wanted to take the child on vacation with them, but needed legal permission from Teresa. Teresa told the couple that it was okay for her son to travel with them, but she didn't want to sign anything.
Ellos vieron pues que yo no mucho quería firmar, mm-hmm. pero dicen ellos que es una firma que estoy dando para que el niño pueda viajar con ellos y cualquier cosa ellos se hacían responsable.
They kept insisting. They said, it's just for traveling.
Entonces le dije, está bien, y se llevaron al niño.
So she agreed to sign. And her youngest child left on vacation with them.
Y cuando estaban allí de viaje me mandaban fotos.
And they made sure to send pictures.
Coming up on Latino USA, M and JP make a proposition to Teresa. Stay with us, no te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo. Modern management made simple. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you.
We're back. And when we left off, Teresa Matias had just joined Holy Spirit Catholic Church and had her five sons baptized. M and JP, the new godparents of her youngest son, had become very involved in the boy's life, including taking him on vacation and throwing him a birthday party that Teresa was not invited to. Then they proposed something new to Teresa. Ashley Cleek and Janice Yamoga continue the story now.
The child had been staying at M and JP's house more and more frequently since the spring of 2015.
Y así pasaron los días hasta que ella me volvió a hablar del adopción, del abogado.
Soon after, Em started talking about adopting her son and mentioned something called an open adoption. Teresa didn't know what that was, so Em explained.
Adopción abierta es cuando tú das a tu hijo a adoptar en la adopción, pero tú sabes con quién lo estás dando.
Teresa says M told her that the church allows open adoption. And what Teresa understood from M was that an open adoption is when you know who has adopted your kid, so you can still see your child.
Tú vas a tener el mismo derecho que ellos.
And have the same rights as the new adoptive parents.
Humberto, the godfather of one of her kids, says Teresa asked him what he thought of her giving her youngest child up for adoption.
And she was like, I'm going to be honest with you. I cannot do it with all of them. It's too much for me.
Humberto says he remembered that Teresa felt like she could give the boy to M and JP, but only under the condition that she would continue to see him and be part of his life.
That was kind of like the rule. She was not giving him in adoption, like not to see him forever.
M told Teresa they should go to a lawyer to talk about this open adoption.
Yo ya estaba como un poco cansada de que ella siempre me dice y me pide que vamos a ver un abogado. Le dije a ella, bueno, le dije, está bien, le dije, acepta. Voy a ir contigo a ver el abogado.
At this point, Teresa says she was tired of them asking her to go with them to see a lawyer. So she said, okay. She accepted.
Their first meeting with a lawyer was in October of 2015, 8 months after the baptism. Teresa says the lawyer spoke mostly to JP, M's husband. They spoke in English. Remember, Teresa grew up in rural Guatemala, and her family spoke Cajobal, a Mayan language. She didn't really speak Spanish until she was a teen, but now that's what she uses most in her everyday life in the U.S., and she only knows a few words in English. So the couple translated for her at the lawyer's meeting, from English to Spanish. But they only spoke to her when they needed to ask her logistical questions, like, where is the child's social security card? She says they met again with the lawyer in November. But again, no one spoke to her. She just sat there, smiled, and nodded. Teresa says that during this time, she started to get sick. She called M and talked with her.
Yo les dije a ellos, si ustedes van a adoptar al niño, pues está bien, le dije, pero con una condición, le digo, de que ustedes nunca me van a prohibir a ver al niño.
Teresa told M and JP the same thing she told Humberto. If they wanted to adopt the boy, she would agree, but with the condition that they would never prohibit her from seeing her son when she wanted, that it would be an open adoption.
Está bien, dice, si tú aceptas así.
She says M agreed. A few weeks later, M and JP told Teresa there was one more meeting with a lawyer. This time, instead of going to the lawyer's office, they went to the courthouse and met a judge. Teresa says she didn't understand what was being said. It was all in English.
No me dijeron nada, no me explicaron nada, nada.
They talked for over an hour. Then, the judge shook Teresa's hand. Outside the courthouse, M and JP told her that this was their last meeting. The adoption was complete.
A few weeks later, Teresa says, she went to the couple's house. It was a typical visit. She brought along her four boys so they could play with their little brother. JP told Teresa they needed to speak to her in another room. Before, Teresa says, most of her conversations had been with M. But this time, JP spoke to her.
Me dijo que lo sentía mucho. Que están muy acostumbrado a él, que gracias a mí.
He said they love the boy very much, and that they thank her and God that the child called JP dad for the first time.
Y él se puso a llorar.
JP started to cry. And then he told her,
que lo sentimos mucho, comadre, pero tú aquí ya no puedes venir, me dijo. Dijo él que porque él, por el bien del niño y por el bien de los otros niños, tus hermanos.
Comadre, he said, we're sorry, but you can't come over anymore to see the boy. It's better for the child and for his brothers. Because after you leave, he's upset and he cries. So you can't come over anymore. Teresa says she didn't speak, didn't say anything. She just stood there, stunned. JP finished talking, and Teresa finally said,
yo no estoy de acuerdo, le dije a él. Yo jamás debí confiar en ustedes, porque yo supe compartir mi hijo.
Teresa told JP she didn't accept what he said, that this was not what they had talked about, that she had trusted them. She agreed to share her child with them, but not like this.
Teresa says she went into the living room and hugged her little boy.
Lo abracé bien fuerte, lo di un beso, le dije que lo quería mucho y le dije que se fuera con su padrino, le dije.
She kissed him and told him she loved him. And then she told him to go be with his godfather. She gathered her four sons and left. And it's only when she walked out of the door that she started to cry. That night, Teresa called a friend from church and started to tell the whole story from the beginning. Her friend told her she knew a lawyer that Teresa should talk to.
My recollection of Teresa, she's a small woman anyway, but she seemed scared. She seemed overwhelmed. She seemed fearful of the system in general.
This is Aaron Ryan. He's a lawyer in Huntsville. And Teresa explained to Aaron that she thought the adoption of her child would be an open adoption, that she would be able to see the child and have the same rights as the new parents. So I asked him about this.
An open adoption, does that exist in Alabama?
What you're calling an open adoption does not exist in Alabama at all.
In Alabama, open adoption does exist, but it means something completely different from what Teresa thought it was. Each state has different laws around adoption, but in Alabama, open only means that the child and the birth parents know each other's names and information. That's it. The birth mother retains no other rights. In Alabama, there is no law or statute that recognizes an open adoption like what Teresa understood. After an adoption, Aaron explained to Teresa, the mother is no longer the parent, officially.
They'll get a new birth certificate with them listed as the biological parents of the child. So Teresa's name is erased from those records.
In Teresa's case, Aaron says there are several things that don't seem normal. All the adoption papers were in English. Nothing was translated into Spanish for Teresa. And having the adoptive parents, M and JP, act as a Spanish interpreter for Teresa, Aaron says, is a conflict of interest. Aaron offered to help Teresa, but she couldn't afford it. A few months after JP told Teresa that she wasn't allowed to see her son anymore, the couple packed up, and along with the child, they moved out of state. We wanted to understand the details of this adoption from someone who was there, so we found the address of the lawyer who handled it. His name is Michael Robertson. So we stopped by early in the afternoon. Michael agrees to talk, but says there are things he can't tell us unless Teresa's present.
Yeah, he's still on the bed and you're welcome to wait.
Okay. Sure. You can wait for a little bit.
I just want to take a second to note how strange this is, because Teresa is not Michael's client. He has no responsibility towards her, no relationship. But Michael is adamant that there are things he only feels comfortable saying with Teresa's permission. Throughout several interviews, Teresa has told us repeatedly that she would like to talk to Michael about what happened during all those meetings she sat in. So we call her, and she agrees to meet.
¿Nos bajamos?
Sí, sí.
So we come back in the evening.
¿Te recuerdas cuando subiste en la oficina del abogado?
Sí.
And Michael's waiting for us.
We sit on couches in the waiting room after the office is closed. Michael has a stack of files next to him. He wants to talk to Teresa about what happened 3 years ago. He starts by telling her what he thinks was happening in her life at the time.
This happened a long time ago, and I can't remember everything, but I do remember this. And I think, Teresa, you should remember this.
Michael says that the father of Teresa's youngest child, the white American guy, was sexually abusing Teresa and coming to her house, harassing her.
And look, you can record wherever you want, okay. But I want her to understand that he was coming over there and abusing her.
As Michael talks, Teresa looks confused, lost. Janice interprets for her, and Teresa explains that this isn't true.
I mentioned the police. I think she understood police. I think she wanted to go with the police. Now, there was no interpreter. There was no interpreter there, but it was clear to me that I repeated this over and over again, and I think she understood a lot of that. I mean, we met for hours. She had to understand. She has to understand that she clearly understood.
Who was the interpreter in the room?
But the interpreter was, again, and I have to say this, it was, well, I can't really say it's my client, but it was my client and his wife.
But even if there was physical abuse, that doesn't justify an adoption if Teresa didn't know what was going on.
She must understand some English. I think she does.
Entiendes inglés. Entiendes un poco inglés.
Pero no entiendo más que unas cuantas palabras, pero todo lo que él está diciendo ahorita no sé de qué está hablando.
She says she understands a few words, but everything you're saying, she doesn't. And we've also been with her at her house, and she doesn't understand her sons.
Michael says that what he eventually understood was that Teresa was giving up her youngest child because she was poor and that she wanted to get child support from her ex-partner, the father of her four older children. Teresa says she never said this, but Michael is adamant that in her gestures, in her nodding, and in whatever interpretation he was told, that this is the other reason Teresa gave up her child for adoption.
I think sincerely that my idea was that she wanted this adoption to go through, very much excited, and merely from the expressions, if she didn't understand on her face, was to make sure this thing went through as quickly as possible. And I think she was a driving force for this. I believe in my heart that she was. Now, if she's saying she's not, then something's wrong. Okay, maybe there's a lapse in memory. I'm not calling her a liar. I'm just saying that this is my understanding, and it was expressions on her face. She was all smiles. She's not smiles now. And I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I guess I'm just wondering, as a lawyer, when the party that's interpreting obviously has an interest in the case, is that a concern to you?
Well, it is, and it should be my, and I guess if there's an error here, you know, it is clear to me that that was something that I probably should have had an interpreter. But usually when people don't want to do something and I am questioning them over an issue repeatedly, okay, there's a different expression such as there is right now.
This conversation continues on for 3 hours. I interpret what Michael says to Teresa in Spanish and then everything that Teresa says back to Michael in English.
I'm sorry, Teresa, but I think you're unhappy over the fact that you didn't think they would move away, and they did move away. And I think that's the only reason why she's complaining now. I may be the only reason at all, but I think she understood about the closed adoption. I just thought maybe she thought that they were going to stay here. Maybe that's it.
I translate this to Teresa.
No, yo la verdad, yo me puse triste de todo. De que cuando ellos me dijeron que Daniel ya no era mi hijo.
Teresa says no. She was upset about everything. She was sad even before they moved, when they told her she could no longer see her son. She says she cries all the time for her son. And suddenly, talking more about everything that happened gets her emotional.
Y luego mis compadres le di la confianza. Compartí a mi nene con ellos. Yo entendía que ellos necesitaban un hijo y solo Dios sabe por qué no les dio. Pero mira lo que me hicieron. Esto no está bien.
She's not who she was before, Teresa says. This person who always smiled. Because the people who she trusted betrayed her. I understood they needed a son, Teresa says. And I shared my son with them. And look what they did to me. At the end of our meeting, Michael says he has a recording of Teresa consenting to the adoption, but that he can't send it to us because of attorney-client privilege. Huntsville is small enough that Michael actually goes to Holy Spirit, the same church as Teresa and the couple. This is something that was a theme in our reporting. Teresa's friends are in the church, and she also said that people at the church had also encouraged her to give up her son. We wanted to better understand the circumstances around the adoption, so we called Holy Spirit's Hispanic ministry multiple times, but no one agreed to be on the record for this story. We didn't get a comment about these specific questions, but people were clearly upset that we reached out to the ministry about the story. From what we understood, this adoption had been discussed in the community. And from our phone calls, we understood that it's clearly a point of tension. But the people we called said this had nothing to do with the church. They said it was a private adoption and a private matter. They also said many times that M and JP were good people. We tried for months to get in touch with the couple, M and JP. We email and call them and leave messages in English and Spanish.
Hola, soy Janice Yamoka. Soy un periodista con Latino USA.
Hi, I'm calling to try to speak to my name is Ashley Cleek.
And no response. It was clear from our conversation with Michael that there was no proper interpreter present in the lawyer's office. But what about in court?
You're good to go. Thank you. You got a purse?
Yes.
We spoke to the judge who presided over Teresa's adoption.
So we wanted to talk to Judge Raglan because I'm almost 100% sure that he was the judge that officiated it.
He didn't remember it specifically, but he said it probably wasn't a big procedure. He told us most adoptions were something he called a sign only, where he just signs at the bottom of the final adoption form. He said if Teresa didn't ask for an interpreter, the probate court wouldn't have provided one. In fact, the judge said that in his 18 years, he's never used an interpreter.
And we found out that's not that unusual. We called all the probate courts in northern Alabama, where thousands of Guatemalan immigrants, like Teresa, live. 26 got back to us. Only 6 were sure they had ever used interpreters in court.
In the state of Alabama, civil court does not cover interpreters. We are not paid to go to civil court. And probate is one of them.
That's Mavi Figueres. She's a certified and trained court interpreter. And for the past 15 years, Mavi's been interpreting in Spanish, but never in probate court. Instead,
the non-English speakers have to bring their own interpreter, whether it's trained or not.
Probate courts deal with small, everyday legal stuff, marriage licenses, wills, but also some serious matters like committing someone to a psychiatric ward, transferring a piece of property, and, like in Teresa's case, certifying an adoption. Not being able to understand what's happening in court is a violation of a person's due process, the 14th Amendment. But that doesn't necessarily translate into state courts providing interpreters. According to the law in Alabama, civil courts, including probate, are not required to provide or pay for an interpreter. Instead, non-English speakers have to bring a volunteer, like a family member or a friend, just like what happened when M and JP interpreted for Teresa.
In 2016, a few months after they moved, the couple sent Teresa a letter in Spanish. The first line read, "Hola, comadre. Believe it or not, we are always thinking about you and your children." It goes on to say, they haven't been able to stay in touch because they say Teresa and her family have harassed them with angry messages. The letter ended with them telling her, there will be a time when she can have contact with the child again, but only when Teresa understands the child now belongs to another family. With the letter, the couple sent three photos of the boy. One is of him at his third birthday party, sipping on a carton of juice. These are the last pictures that Essa has of him.
Thanks to producers Ashley Gleick and Janice Yamoka for that story. Over 3 years have passed since Teresa Matias last saw her son in Huntsville, Alabama. At this point, Teresa has at least one option. She can hire a lawyer and ask the biological father to come forward and contest the adoption. But Teresa says she doesn't have the money to do that. Adoptions like this one, between two families, without any agency involved, are confidential. So it's impossible to know how many cases like Teresa's have happened in the past. What is clear, though, is that the probate courts in Alabama that handle these kinds of adoptions are not required to hire interpreters. As a result, many life-changing decisions, like whether a child leaves one family and joins another, are happening in English only. This episode was reported by Ashley Gleick and Janice Yamoka, with additional reporting help from Lucas Southard. It was edited by Sofia Paliza Carr and mixed by Stephanie LeBeau. The Latino USA team includes Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Marta Martinez, Daisy Contreras, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Patricia Zulbarán, Ginny Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our editorial director is Julio Ricardo Varela. Our senior engineer is Julia Caruso. Our associate engineers are Gabriela Baez and JJ Carubin. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. Our fellows are Elisa Baena, Monica Morales Garcia, and Andrew Viñales. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Recuérdate, no te vayas. And we'll see you on our next episode. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and New York Women's Foundation. The New York Women's Foundation, funding women leaders that build solutions in their communities and celebrating 30 years of radical generosity.
Here's a podcast from our archives. Archives. I eat chives.
From PR.